Okay, well, the last time we studied together, which I guess was, what, 3 weeks ago? Does everybody remember what book we're in? Genesis, I think. And last time we were together, we studied in chapter 39, and we saw Joseph wrongfully imprisoned by Potiphar, who was his owner, because Potiphar's wife had accused Joseph after he declined her sexual advances. She accused him of trying to attack her, to rape her, and Potiphar became so angry that he took Joseph, this young man, for whom he had so much respect that he put him in charge of his entire household, he took him and put him in a prison. And so Joseph finds himself languishing in prison. Psalm 105 tells us that this wasn't just a house arrest sort of a deal. Joseph was put in a dungeon. He was put in chains. He was not in a country club prison. So he's being punished for something that he didn't do. But at the end of chapter 39, we saw very clearly that Moses, who is writing the book of Genesis, was aware of the fact that the Lord was with Joseph. Verse 21 of chapter 39 says, "But the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him and gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer." So the chief jailer likes Joseph so much, or he has such respect for the person that Joseph is, that he puts Joseph in charge of the prison. And so now the prison is under Joseph's control, and all the prisoners are under Joseph's control. And it's in that context that we come to chapter 40, and we see a couple of VIPs enter the picture. It is absolutely impossible, I think, friends, for us to look at this study without seeing the hand of God actively at work in all of this. It just boggles my mind to witness what's going on here. Understand, these are real people. They're in the same world that you and I inhabit. And Joseph is in what is at that time the most powerful nation on the earth. And he's getting ready to get introduced to the most powerful single person on the earth at that time, who was Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. But in the meantime, we've got a couple of characters coming in here in verse 40. So let's read chapter 40 together. "Then it came about after these things." These things being Joseph's imprisonment and him being put in charge of the prison. "The cupbearer and baker for the king of Egypt offended their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was furious with his two officials, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. So he put them in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, in the jail, the same place where Joseph was imprisoned. And the captain of the bodyguard put Joseph in charge of them, and he took care of them, and they were in confinement for some time. Then the cupbearer and the baker for the king of Egypt, who were confined in jail, both had a dream the same night, each man with his own dream, and each dream with his own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning and observed them, behold, they were dejected. And he asked Pharaoh's officials who were with him in confinement in his master's house, 'Why are your faces so sad today?' Then they said to him, 'We have had a dream, and there is no one to interpret it.' Then Joseph said to them, 'Do not interpretations belong to God, Elohim? Tell it to me, please.' So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, 'In my dream, behold, there was a vine in front of me, and on the vine were three branches. And as it was budding, its blossoms came out, and its clusters produced ripe grapes. Now Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, so I took the grapes and squeezed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. Then Joseph said to him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you will put Pharaoh's cup into his hand according to your former custom when you were his cupbearer. Only keep me in mind when it goes well with you, and please do me a kindness by mentioning me to Pharaoh and get me out of this house. For I was in fact kidnapped from the land of the Hebrews, and even here I have done nothing that they should have put me into the dungeon. When the chief baker saw that he had interpreted favorably, he said to Joseph, I also saw in my dream, and behold, there were 3 baskets of white bread on my head. And in the top basket there were some of all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, and the birds were eating them out of the basket on my head. Then Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The 3 baskets are 3 days. Within 3 more days, Pharaoh will lift up your head, notice, from you, and will hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat your flesh off you. Thus it came about on the 3rd day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, that he made a feast for all his servants. And he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief cupbearer to his office, and he put the cup into Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker just as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet, notice verse 23, yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. Boo. Now, in order to better understand what's going on here, we need to clarify who these two guys are. For a long time, I thought the baker and the cupbearer, I knew what a cupbearer was. That's the person who tasted the wine before the king drank it. Because in the court intrigue that could go on, one of the ways you did away with the current king was to put something in his wine that wasn't good for him, in addition to the wine. And so all kings had cupbearers who handed them their wine, handled their drink as they were eating to see to it that they were not poisoned. But my view of these gentlemen previously was that they were like household servants. The baker, guy works in the kitchen, he bakes bread. The cupbearer, a guy who is with the king and handles his drink. Actually, that's not an accurate picture. These two men were court officials. These were high-ranking people in the court of the Pharaoh. They were close to him, probably maybe even relatives of his, because you had to have somebody in those days that you trusted implicitly in order to fulfill these two areas. The baker is not the guy who was in the kitchen baking bread, as a matter of fact. He was the guy who handled the Pharaoh's food and brought his food to him. Notice it calls them the chief baker and the chief cupbearer, and it talks about them being court officials in the court. So these were important men. That's the point that I'm trying to get across to you, as opposed to household servants. So these two men, we're not told, and we don't know, what they did to offend Pharaoh. But whatever it was sufficient for them to be confined in prison. So they come under Joseph's care because he was in charge of the prison and he was in charge of all of the officers. Again, I don't want to beat this horse to death, but don't miss what's happening here. Do you think that Pharaoh became angry at his 2 highest court officials and friends by coincidence? I don't. Do you think that their being placed in a prison where Joseph had been put in charge was a coincidence? I don't. God had arranged all of this in the most powerful kingdom on the planet at that time, for the benefit of Joseph and his overall program, what God is putting in place. Joseph is a player in the deal, as if you will, but he's not the only one. He's an important cog, But God has a bigger plan that he is executing. His big plan is he's got to get Jacob's family out of Canaan and get them into Egypt so that he can grow them into a huge nation of people, which they're not going to do if they stay in Canaan. They've already started intermarrying with the Canaanites, and that's not going to work in God's program. So he's got to get them out of there and get them to Egypt. And that's the overall program as to what's going on here. Verse 5 tells us, strangely, that both the chief cupbearer and the chief baker have a dream on the same night. Another happy coincidence. These dreams were so disturbing to the two men that the next day we're told that when Joseph saw them, he asked, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Now, why were they disturbed? I think it's because the dreams were so vivid and both men had some inkling that the dreams had something to do with their future, but they didn't know what they meant. So that's why they were upset. They explain all this to Joseph, that they've had these dreams in verse 8, but they complain that they have no one to interpret the dreams for them. Now, the reason why they were upset about that is that in Egypt, and we'll see it later on in Babylon as well, they developed a very sophisticated pseudo-scientific system of dream interpretation. To the Egyptians, the interpretation of dreams was extremely important because they believed that dreams held the key to the future. And so when somebody had a dream, they wanted that dream interpreted. And Pharaoh had a whole group of people whose job it was to interpret dreams for him. Well, the cupbearer and the baker are in prison. They don't have access to the dream interpreters. They've had these dreams, they're concerned about them, but there's nobody to tell them what's going on. So they're upset about that. Then Joseph makes a very interesting statement there in verse 8. He says, "Do not interpretations belong to God?" Notice, he did not say to them, "Well, I have the ability to interpret dreams." That wasn't Joseph's statement. That wasn't his attitude. He didn't even say, "God has given me the ability to interpret dreams." Rather, Joseph does what I'm not sure all of us would do, and that is he gives all the credit to God. He says, "The interpretation of your dreams belongs to Elohim. He's the one who can interpret your dreams for you." And he says, "Tell them to me." In essence, Joseph is speaking in faith. He's saying the interpretation belongs to God alone, but I'm in touch with God. You tell me your dream, and God will give me the interpretation, and I'll give it to you. Then verses 9 through 11, emboldened by Joseph's statement that he can interpret their dreams for them, the cupbearer tells him his dream. The dream is pretty simple. He sees this vine. The vine has three branches. The branches bud, they bring forth flowers, and the flowers turn into grapes, and then they turn into ripe grapes. He then takes those grapes and squeezes them into the cup of Pharaoh and hands the cup to Pharaoh. And Joseph then, in verses 12 and 13, does not even pause. When he heard the dream, he immediately told the cupbearer the interpretation. Notice the fact that Joseph's interpretation is going to be proven either right or wrong in 3 days. So if you're going to give somebody an interpretation of their dream, and it's going to happen in 3 days, you best be accurate. Because I have a feeling if it had not come about as Joseph said, then his life would have been in trouble as well. So he gives him the interpretation of his dream. In verses 14 and 15, Joseph made a request of the cupbearer. His request was simple. When Pharaoh restores you to your old position, and he is going to restore you to your old position, when he does that, please don't forget me. I'm not here for something that I actually did. I shouldn't be here in the first place. As a matter of fact, I shouldn't even be in Egypt. I was kidnapped from Egypt and sold into slavery to get to Egypt in the first place. So when you get restored by Pharaoh to your old position, please don't forget me. Get me out of here. Talk to me about Pharaoh. Or talk to Pharaoh about me. Then in verses 16 and 17, we see that they, encouraged by the fact that the cupbearer had gotten a favorable interpretation, the baker now tells Joseph his dream. And his dream is very similar. He has three baskets on his head with white bread in them. One basket has other baked items, and the birds are eating out of the basket that's on his head. And Joseph then doesn't even hesitate in telling the baker the interpretation of his dream. However, in this case, Pharaoh was going to behead him, he says, and hang his body on a tree for the birds to eat. Notice in verse 19 it says, Pharaoh will lift up your head from you. Meaning, your head's coming off. Now, I would suggest to you that that interpretation took no small amount of intestinal fortitude on Joseph's part. He's telling a high official in Pharaoh's court, 3 days from now, pal, you're losing your head. I'm not sure that I wouldn't have soft-pedaled that just a little bit. Well, you know, the interpretation of your dream is not quite as positive. I'm not sure that you're going to be restored exactly to your position like the cupbearer. That might have been closer to what I would have done. Joseph doesn't even put fancy pants on it. He just tells him, your head's coming off 3 days from now. That took some intestinal fortitude, I would suggest. Verse 20, sure enough, this verse tells us that 3 days after Joseph's interpretation was Pharaoh's birthday. Yet another one of those coincidences. So Pharaoh throws this big party for his birthday. And it says to us here that he lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the chief baker among his servants. That phrase, lifted up their heads, means that he brought them into his presence. He had them removed from prison and brought into them. In this case, for the purpose of settling their cases. Again, we don't know what the offense was. And we don't know that the baker was more guilty than the cupbearer. We don't know that either one of them was guilty of anything. But Pharaoh was the judge and the jury and the executioner. So he carried out what he wanted to. And in both cases, they turn out exactly as Joseph had interpreted. The cupbearer was returned to his position, but the baker was beheaded and his body hanged on a tree for the birds to pick the flesh off his bones. Then we come to verse 23. I don't know about you, but I find verse 23 to be an extremely sad verse. It is, unfortunately, what commonly happens when we put our faith in human beings. One of the things that I do when I'm studying Scripture, especially in a story like this, is to try to put myself into the position of, for example, Joseph in this situation. And in doing that, you get really kind of a sad picture, because here's Joseph. He's given the interpretation, and the next thing he knows, 3 days later, these two guys are taken out of the prison. Joseph's still there. But he's told the cupbearer, you're going to be restored. Pharaoh's going to restore you. Now, don't forget me, pal. Mention me to Pharaoh and get me out of here. So I can picture Joseph, every time that prison door opened, I can picture Joseph for the first few times running to the door, fully expecting that there's going to be somebody there to take him out. No. And then after a while, he stops going to the door. He just looks up to see who it is. Still not letting him out. Nobody coming to get him. And after a while, Joseph figures either he forgot or he didn't care enough to do anything. Because I'm not being let out of here. In the first verse of the next chapter, we're going to find out that it took 2 full years. I cannot imagine the discouragement that must have taken place in Joseph. Now, as we begin the next chapter, chapter 42, as I say, we're going to see that it took 2 full years. And God begins to move in order to bring about his plan. So let's read together the first several verses of chapter 41. And then we'll take a look at those in some detail. One of the most, one of the most interesting, colorful chapters in all of Scripture, chapter 41. The other one of my favorites in this particular section is when the brothers come to Egypt and discover that Joseph ain't dead. And in fact, he's running the place. That one I also find to be very colorful. But let's read the first 44 verses of chapter 41. Quite a long passage. Now it happened at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream. And behold, he was standing by the Nile. And lo, from the Nile there came up 7 cows, sleek and fat. And they grazed in the marsh grass. Then behold, 7 other cows came up after them from the Nile, ugly and gaunt. And they stood by the other cows on the bank of the Nile. And the ugly and gaunt cows ate up the 7 sleek and fat cows. Then Pharaoh awoke. And he fell asleep and dreamed a second time. And behold, 7 ears of grain came up on a single stalk, plump and good. Then behold, 7 ears, thin and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed up the 7 plump and full ears. Then Pharaoh awoke, and behold, it was a dream. Now it came about in the morning that his spirit was troubled, so he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men. These are the dream interpreters that I was talking to you about a while ago. And Pharaoh told them his dreams, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh. Then the chief cupbearer has one of those oh no moments. The chief cupbearer spoke to Pharaoh saying, I would make mention today of my own offenses. Pharaoh was furious with his servants and he put me in confinement in the house of the captain of the bodyguard, both me and the chief baker. And we had a dream on the same night, he and I. Each of us dreamed according to the interpretation of his own dream. Now a Hebrew youth was with us there, a servant of the captain of the bodyguard, and we related them to him, and he interpreted our dreams for us. To each one he interpreted according to his own dream. And it came about that just as he had interpreted for us, so it happened. He restored me in my office, but he hanged him. Then Pharaoh sent and called for Joseph, and they hurriedly brought him out of the dungeon. And when he had shaved himself and changed his clothes, he came to Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, I've had a dream, but no one can interpret it. And I have heard it said about you that you, when you hear a dream, you can interpret it. I can't pass by that without saying to you, what an opportunity for Joseph to make himself look great. You betcha I can interpret your dreams. Man, I'm a dream interpreting fool. If you'll get me out of prison, I'll interpret till your head spins. Notice what Joseph does. He doesn't do that. Joseph then answered Pharaoh saying, it is not in me. Elohim will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. He's speaking about the Hebrew God to a man who is himself worshiped as a god. In Egypt, Pharaoh was a god. And Joseph is saying, Elohim, God will give you a favorable answer. So Pharaoh spoke to Joseph. In my dream, behold, I was standing on the bank of the Nile, and behold, seven cows, fat and sleek, came up out of the Nile, and they grazed in the marsh grass. And lo, seven other cows came up after them, poor, very ugly and gaunt, such as I had never seen for ugliness in all the land of Egypt. Byron Yont, my late father-in-law, would have said, they were barely pretty. And the lean and ugly cows ate up the first seven fat cows. Yet when they had devoured them, it could not be detected that they had devoured them, for they were just as ugly as before. Then I awoke. I saw also in my dream, and behold, seven ears, full and good, came up on a single stalk. And lo, seven ears, withered, thin, and scorched by the east wind, sprouted up after them. And the thin ears swallowed the seven good ears. Then I told it to the magicians, but there was no one who could explain it to me. Now Joseph said to Pharaoh, Pharaoh's dreams are one and the same. God, Elohim, has told to Pharaoh what he, Elohim, is about to do. The seven good cows are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dreams are one and the same. And the seven lean and ugly cows that came up after them are 7 years. And the seven thin ears scorched by the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. It is as I have spoken to Pharaoh. God has shown to Pharaoh what he is about to do. Behold, 7 years of great abundance are coming in all the land of Egypt. And after them 7 years of famine will come, and all the abundance will be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine will ravage the land. So the abundance will be unknown in the land because of that subsequent famine, for it will be very severe. Now, as for repeating of the dream to Pharaoh twice, it means that the matter is determined by God, and God will quickly bring it about. And now let Pharaoh look for a man discerning and wise, and set him over the land of Egypt. Let Pharaoh take action to appoint overseers in charge of the land, and let him exact a fifth of the produce of the land of Egypt in the 7 years of abundance. Then let them gather all the food in those good years that are coming, and store up the grain for food in the cities under Pharaoh's authority, and let them guard it. And let the food become a reserve for the land for the 7 years of famine which will occur in the land of Egypt, so that the land may not perish during the famine. Now the proposal seemed good to Pharaoh and to all his servants. Then Pharaoh said to his servants, please mark this question. Can we find a man like this in whom is a divine spirit? So Pharaoh said to Joseph, since God has informed you of all this, there is no one so discerning and wise as you are. You shall be over my house, and according to your command, all my people shall do homage. Only in the throne I will be greater than you. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, see, I have set you over all the land of Egypt. Then Pharaoh took off his signet ring from his hand. That's the symbol of his office. And put it on Joseph's hand, and clothed him in garments of fine linen, and put the gold necklace around his neck. And he had him ride in his second chariot, and they proclaimed before him, bow the knee. And he set him over all the land of Egypt. Moreover, Pharaoh said to Joseph, though I am Pharaoh, yet without your permission, no one shall raise his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. Gee whiz, what a change. Understand, last night, this young man went to bed in prison. Today, he's made the prime minister of the most powerful nation on earth. When God answers a prayer, Does he answer it or what? I mean, it's just astounding. This chapter begins, verses 1 through 7, by Pharaoh relating two dreams that he had. I won't repeat those for you because you're familiar with them. The first dream is seven sleek and fat cattle. Then seven gaunt cattle come up and they eat the seven sleek and fat ones. And after they eat them, there's no sign that they've eaten them. And then we have 7 ears of corn that are full and healthy and robust. And then 7 weakly little miserable scorched ears come up and they consume those first 7. And Pharaoh doesn't understand what's going on. Pharaoh has this dream. Proverbs 21:1 says, "The king's heart is like a channel of water in his God's hand. He turns it wherever he wants." God has turned Pharaoh's heart here. He's given him this dream, or these two dreams. And Pharaoh has called in his dream interpreters, or he calls in his dream interpreters, and they can't handle it. I find it interesting that at the same time God gives Pharaoh these two dreams, at the same time he blanks the minds of these professional dream interpreters. Now, I'm not a dream interpreter. I don't pretend to be a dream interpreter. But I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to see, when you look at those dreams, kind of what's going on there. 7 sleek and fat cattle consumed by 7 gaunt cattle? I think I'd take a stab at it. But God has supernaturally blanked their minds. They don't have a clue what those dreams are about. And so Pharaoh is stuck. Now up steps the cupbearer. 2 years late, by our accounting, but right on time, according to God's timing. Understand now, we see now, that it was necessary for Joseph to stay in that prison for that 2-year period of time so that he would be available when Pharaoh had these dreams and he could interpret them. This is all a part of God's plan being worked out to the most minute detail, as it always is. So Pharaoh sent for Joseph in order to see if Joseph could interpret his dream, as he had for the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. Notice that Joseph does not come into Pharaoh's presence in his prison garments. That would have been disrespectful. So he shaved himself. Probably in Egypt at that time, both his beard and his head, so that he would look something like me, only much younger and better looking. Because that was the mode of dress in Egypt. Many of the men, especially the high men in Pharaoh's court, shaved their heads. And you see that depicted in Egyptian hieroglyphics, if you ever have taken a look at those. So Joseph shaves, he changes his clothes, he comes into Pharaoh's presence, and as I said in verse 15, Joseph has this perfect opportunity to make himself look good. But Joseph again declines the opportunity to make himself look good, even though it could have been very beneficial for him. And he says, "It, the ability to interpret dreams, is not in me, Elohim. God will give Pharaoh the favorable answer." The Egyptians, I'm sorry. Yes. Yeah, one of the things that I think is interesting about this is Joseph's boldness in declaring his God to the Egyptians. He doesn't hesitate. He's not bashful. He's not reticent. He says, "Elohim, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, will give you this answer." He gives the credit to him, but he's faithful in making that statement. I think he's trying to keep me from sweating in front of you. So that's what's going on here. He's doing a great job. I'm not sweating and you are all freezing unto death. Then Pharaoh recounts his two dreams to Joseph. And Joseph does not hesitate to give him the interpretation of those dreams. They're going to be 7 years of plenty, followed by 7 years of extreme famine. Joseph emphasized a couple of times that the 7 years of famine were going to be so severe that the 7 years of plenty would be totally forgotten. In verse 32 then, Joseph answers a question that Pharaoh had not asked, but which must have been in his mind. If these two dreams are exactly the same, then why did God give me two? Wouldn't one have done the job? And Joseph said, here's the reason why God has given you two dreams, the same dream in two forms. What he's saying to you is, this is not something that's off in the distant future. This is going to happen very soon. Then, in the next several verses, 33 through 36, Joseph is bold enough to make a suggestion to Pharaoh as to what he should do in light of what was coming. Don't miss the significance of that. Again, we have boldness from this 30-year-old young man in front of the most powerful man on the planet. And Joseph says, here's what you need to do, Pharaoh. And I'm fascinated by the fact that he didn't say to Pharaoh, you need to go out and start gathering up the grain during the years of abundance. He's standing in front of Pharaoh and he says, you need to find someone for this job. Someone, he says, who is wise and discerning, and set this person over the land of Egypt. Again, I say, this took nerve. Notice that Joseph's plan involves someone other than Pharaoh being in charge. And we don't have any indication at this point that Joseph was bucking for the job himself. Joseph's just saying, here's what you need to do. You need to find somebody who's wise and discerning, who can do this for you. Under this person, Joseph says, you need to appoint a group of overseers throughout the land. Then this individual and the overseers would be responsible to take, and I'm interested by this, 1/5 of the grain in each of those 7 years of abundance. Not 1/7, 1/5. So he's allowing for a margin of error. And he's also allowing for them to have an abundance. He says these years of abundance are going to be so abundant that the people who are growing the crops are not going to miss them. They're going to have plenty. But you need to take 1/5 of these crops and put them in storage in a place that can be secured and guarded during the 7 years of famine. Thus, Egypt would have a food reserve to be used during the famine. Verse 37 then tells us that Pharaoh and all of his advisors liked Joseph's plan. Verses 38 and 39 are key verses. Notice two things. Joseph had recommended to Pharaoh that he find a man of discernment and wisdom. And Pharaoh recognized both of those qualities in Joseph. In addition, Pharaoh recognized along with his whole court that Joseph had a special quality or spirit about him that was not in other men. I don't know if you've ever had the situation of being around a person who is truly godly. But if you have, as I have, the Spirit of God just radiates out of those people. And even non-believers can see it. They can't identify it. They don't know what it is. They just know there's something about this person that is exceptional. And that's what Pharaoh, this pagan king, saw in Joseph. I don't know what this kid's got, but he's got something that we need in charge. And he says, nobody is going to be more wise and discerning than are you. So Pharaoh takes Joseph and he puts him in charge of all of Egypt. As I said, what a change. Last night he was in languishing in prison. Tonight he'll go to sleep on silk sheets with a multitude of servants. The man in charge of the greatest kingdom on earth at that time. Now in this next section, we're going to see Pharaoh trying to Egyptianize his new prime minister as much as possible. Don't forget, as I told you earlier, the Egyptians had a real strong disdain for any and all foreigners. As far as the Egyptians were concerned, if you're Egyptian, fine. If you're not Egyptian, we don't want anything to do with you. So Pharaoh has appointed this non-Egyptian, and what's worse, a man who comes from a family of a shepherd, and if they didn't like foreigners, they really didn't have any respect for shepherds. Because they thought that was the lowest thing you could possibly be. So Pharaoh recognizes that he's going to need to make Joseph look as Egyptian as he possibly can. So, beginning in verse 45 of chapter 41, then Pharaoh named Joseph Zaphnath-Paneah. And he gave him Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, as his wife. And Joseph went forth over the land of Egypt. Now Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh and went through all the land of Egypt. And during the 7 years of plenty, the land brought forth abundantly. So he gathered all the food in these 7 years which occurred in the land of Egypt, and placed the food in the cities. He placed in every city the food from its own surrounding fields. Thus Joseph stored up grain in great abundance, like the sand of the sea, until he stopped measuring it, for it was beyond measure. Now before the year of the famine came, two sons were born to Joseph, whom Asenath, the daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, bore to him. And Joseph named the firstborn Manasseh, or as we pronounce it, Manasseh. For he said, God has made me forget all my trouble in all my father's household. And he named the second Ephraim, or Ephraim, or as we pronounce it, Ephraim. For he said, God has made me fruitful in the land of my affliction. When the 7 years of plenty which had been in the land of Egypt came to an end, and the 7 years of famine began to come, just as Joseph had said, then there was a famine in all the lands, but in all the land of Egypt there was bread. So when the land of Egypt was famished, and the people cried out to Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said to all the Egyptians, go to Joseph. Whatever he says to you, you shall do. When the famine was spread over the face of the earth, all the face of the earth, then Joseph opened all the storehouses and sold to the Egyptians, and the famine was severe in the land of Egypt. And the people of all the earth came to Egypt to buy grain from Joseph, because the famine was severe in all the earth. We're just about out of time, and there are a couple of things here in this passage that I want you to see. Now, first of all, this Potipharah, priest of On. On is the name of a city. It's actually the same name as Heliopolis. And it was a center of the worship of the sun god Ra, one of the chief gods of the Egyptians. So Potipharah, this priest of On, or Heliopolis, was the priest to the sun god Ra. His daughter was given to Joseph as a wife. And it says down in verse 50 and 51, that before the first year of the famine came, two sons were born to Joseph. The first one he named Manasseh, or Manasseh. It's such a beautiful thing, folks, because Manasseh means forgetting. or one who causes to forget. If anybody on the planet had reason to remember the wrongs that had been done to him, Joseph did. Think of the people who, when Joseph was named prime minister, got very nervous. Number one, the cupbearer. His poor memory had left this guy in prison for 2 full years. Had I been the cupbearer and Joseph was put in charge, I would have been real nervous. And if Joseph had been a person who takes revenge, that cupbearer would have had his head lifted off of him as the baker had. Think of Potiphar. And more importantly, Potiphar's wife. Potiphar comes home one day for lunch, and Mrs. Potiphar is there, and Potiphar says, "You remember Joseph, that guy who was our household servant? You'll never guess what happened today." She says, "What?" She's thinking maybe he was executed. He was made prime minister of the whole country. There's nobody above him except Pharaoh. And she says, "Oh, no." Think of Joseph's brothers. And we're going to see in a couple of chapters when they come down and they find out that Joseph is in charge of Egypt. Folks, they're not happy. They don't jump up and down and clap their hands and say, "Oh boy, our brother is in charge of Egypt." No, 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 no. They say, "What are we going to do? He's going to kill us." Joseph named this firstborn son forgotten or forgetting. And he says in verse 51, please notice, "God has made me forget all my trouble and all my father's household." Gee whiz. What a thing. God has made me forget all that's been done to me. The cupbearer doesn't need to worry. Potiphar doesn't need to worry. Potiphar's wife doesn't need to worry. And, says here, my father's household, my brothers don't need to worry either. Because what they meant for evil, God meant for good. And then he names his second son Ephraim. We pronounce that Ephraim as if the I is in front of the A. It's not. Ephraim. We've already seen in Hebrew that when a word has the suffix im on it, it is a plural word. What that word means is doubly fruitful. Now your study notes may say, as my study notes in my Bible does, that the word means fruitful. Doesn't mean that. It means doubly fruitful. Get the picture here. Joseph cannot be, nor can we be, doubly fruitful, blessed by God, as long as we're carrying around baggage from our past. If we harbor ill will against somebody from our past, God is not going to bless us. Joseph recognized that. The first son, not the second one, the first son was named forgetting, and the second one was named doubly fruitful. Because after he forgot, God made him doubly fruitful. And again, Joseph gives the credit to Elohim, his God. He doesn't take the credit for himself. He doesn't say, "How magnanimous am I in forgiving all of these things?" He says, "This is a gift from God. I couldn't have done it on my own." Thank you very much for your kind attention tonight.